Welcome back into the Red Zone Podcast. My name is Colton Bartholomew, UW football beat reporter here for the Wisconsin State Journal, joined by longtime basketball and football beat reporter Jim Polzine. And Jim, it's a rough week here in Badgerland. Fans are very angry about this basketball team and where things stand right now after a tough loss on Sunday to Michigan. What's been the feeling the last couple of days as people are kind of digesting that and looking ahead here?
Yeah, you know, I do that thing on Twitter where I ask fans their thoughts because we have turned it into a segment on, we've turned it into a story after every game, and they've, because it's so wildly popular. Mm-hmm. I think at one point the other day I looked and they had 235 replies. Now there's no way I can go through all those replies. And in fact, I usually just let
mute it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it's overwhelming. I can't possibly get to it. But yeah, I'm guessing the majority of them were upset. I think part of it was because how that game played out, you know, like,
yeah,
if you lose that game, it's not surprising they lost that game, but how they lost it made it even more frustrating.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into that. We got a lot of stuff to talk about today on the Today Show. Both sports actually had a kind of a, as usual, Jim, right after, basically the day after we recorded a podcast and put it out, news broke multiple ways on both sports, and then multiple games happened. So, you know, just classic Red Zone stuff here. But we'll talk about this Michigan game, and then a big weekend coming up for the Badgers basketball team, playing Iowa on Thursday night. You guys are probably listening to this Thursday. So Thursday night, that Iowa game, huge kind of possible bounce back. We'll see what happens there. And then they also play Northwestern. That's Sunday, right, Jim? I should have looked that up. Yeah, Sunday. So we talked about earlier that that's one of their must wins that's on this remaining schedule. It's probably the last one that you can easily chalk up for a W for this Denver, you know, Wisconsin team. So we'll talk about that a little bit. And then we'll talk about, last thing for basketball, NCAA seeding, kind of the what's on the line here for the Badgers, because right now they're on a tipping point. Everybody kind of sees them still in that, you know, second, third tier level of this, of the country right now. But if the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks here don't go well, I think that that's definitely in the balance and could change across the country. So we'll get into that. And then from the football side, late last week, got to talk to Paul Chris, talk to him about coaching quarterbacks again, calling plays again. We're going to get into what that means for the football team, why that's happening. And then they hired a cornerbacks coach, which is kind of a shakeup of the structure of the team as a whole, or the coaching staff as a whole. Hank Poteet, an NFL veteran, coming to the Badgers to coach that position. So we'll talk about that also, and then kind of what that means for the whole defense. So like I said, lots to talk about, and we'll get into all of it right after this. All right, Jim, let's jump into this Michigan game, kind of dissect it here. We're recording this Wednesday morning, so I'm sure you've been able to go back and watch it a little bit. Just, it's one of those games that it makes sense only because it's this team this year, but you saw how good they could be and what they can do when they're making shots, and then the complete opposite the entire second half.
Yeah, it really was kind of the best and worst of this team. And again, like, you know, we've beaten this a lot this year, but if they're making shots, it just makes the offense look so much better, even though I don't know that the offense was running all that great in the first half. They hit some contested shots. I mean, Aleem Ford, he had a post-up that was contested that was not what I would call a great look. Basically the same look that they've been getting recent games and haven't been going in. It happened to go in. He had some contested three-pointers that, you know, went in that haven't been going in. Michigan bailed out Wisconsin a couple times by fouling Trice on jumpers. That was, you know, 5 points over two possessions late in the first half. I thought they did a little bit better job attacking. You know, Micah Potter, I can think of once, went straight at the rim and finished nicely. So that's the difference between a really efficient half and then the second half. It was really the opposite. You know, I think Michigan extended their defense, made it a little more difficult, and Wisconsin got frazzled. They committed some turnovers on drives to the basket. They missed some open shots. Other than Johnny Davis, they had a tough time creating shots. And, you know, suddenly you end it with 20 points and 34 possessions, which is, you know, a pretty awful efficiency percentage.
Yeah, when they started putting up the stat, I think it was about 4 or 5 minutes left in the game. It was like Jonathan Davis has 5 baskets. The rest of the team has 3 in the second half or something like that. And then they end the second, the starters ended the second half. I think it was like 3 for 27, something like that in the half. It's just like, yeah, well, when you're going 1-on-5 basically offensively against a good team, it's not going to work out. And I think the thing that frustrated fans the most is not only the fact that they had a 14-point lead in the second half, ended up being 12 at halftime, and then they lose, but it was the fact that they're at home, they get down to the crunch time, it's like 4 or 5 minutes left, and it's a close game. That's one of those things that used to be kind of an advantage for Wisconsin. They would always pull those ones out, and you would think that a team like this, as you were talking about, wouldn't make those mistakes and wouldn't get frazzled in a big moment like that. Even though Michigan's a great team this year, I don't think when you watch them on the floor, you can say athletically or just talent-wise, Wisconsin matches up there. But that's where you would think experience and time playing together, which Wisconsin has more than anybody, would be able to overcome. It's just not this year.
No, and it's – you know, it's not always one consistent reason why either. You know, sometimes you can blame it on shots. They've had stretches of bad defense, even though overall I think their defense has been, you know, pretty solid. Turnovers, you look at it and they're 4th nationally at lowest turnover percentage, but they've had some costly ones. And you know, when you look at 10 turnovers, I think they had 10 the other day. It's probably that number could have been reduced to 5 or 6. They had 3 that were just unforced. I can think of 2 in the first half with Trice and Reavers on pick and pop situations. There was one in the second half where they got a really nice stop defensively. I think they're up 5 and they had a really nice stop defensively. Davison comes up with kind of a 50-50 rebound and passes it to Trice, who wasn't looking, and the ball goes out of bounds in the backcourt. And it's just like, you've wasted it. You know, you don't even get a shot off that possession. And those are the things that when you're struggling offensively, you can't do. I mean, you can't go trips without
at least a shot. Yeah.
Right. Even if it's a bad shot, it's, you know, at least got some kind of chances of going in. So it's just, it's a lot of things, you know, it's not just one or two people. It's different people every game. Aleem Ford finally had a really good half the other day. But others didn't, you know. Reavers struggled again. Brad Davison missed, you know, that was a big moment of the game. If we want to talk about big moments, Davison misses point blank range, and then they go to the review to see if it was a flagrant foul. Mm-hmm. So not only does he miss a basket there that, you know, really should have been 2 points, Wisconsin gets a technical foul out of it, and Trice only makes 1 of 2 free throws. So you're looking at what could have been 4 points. You only get 1 out of it. And that same thing happened in Illinois a couple of weeks ago. Was there was possession. They could have had 7 or 8 points and they had 3, and they're leaving points on the board. And that's what you just can't do. I mean, it's a frustrating thing for this team is as much as they struggle offensively, you can't give away opportunities to score, and they just are too much.
Yeah, it's just so weird because it's the worst season, I feel like, to not be able to be there, as we've talked about on the podcast before, the challenges of kind of covering some of these teams because something seems off, and it's tough when you're doing Zoom calls and whatever else when there's 8 people on every conversation you have to try to figure that stuff out, because it's just like the stuff that's plaguing this team, as you mentioned, the unforced turnovers. It doesn't seem like at times they're locked in defensively when that was going to be their calling card, because I mean, obviously it's a Wisconsin team, but just this team in particular it was always going to be defense leading the offense for them. But it's just something just doesn't seem connecting. And we're so late in the season now that it's just like, I can't see a switch flipping here and things magically turn around kind of like they did last season. And I don't know, it's just that run that they had to win the regular season championship last year and look like one of the best teams in the country going into the tournament. I just can't see this team being able to find that.
Now, we were talking beforehand, before we started recording, that one of the differences is down the stretch last year it wasn't an easy schedule, but it was certainly easier than this closing run. So it's hard to, it's kind of an apples and orange comparison because you're playing just much harder competition. And that goes to the overall theme, is that the Big Ten has gotten better this season, much better. A lot of teams around them have gotten better. Wisconsin has not gotten better. And in some cases, it's just individually, they're not performing as well as they did last year. compare the numbers. You know, it's simple. So that's part of it is, you know, there were a lot of expectations on this team, but those were made with the expectation that this team could progress from where it was last February and early March. And it just, it hasn't happened. And I know I'm talking to Greg Gard yesterday. It's he's frustrated because they just haven't found a rhythm offensively at all. And, you know, he's tried different lineups. He was asked again about using Potter and Reavers together. Someone else asked.
Okay.
And I will say this, I wouldn't be completely shocked if those two start together tomorrow against Iowa.
Okay. Yes, Iowa, yeah.
Only because Iowa goes big, right? Iowa starts Garza and Keegan Murray. They play Nungi and Garza together. I mean, I think at some point, if they don't start tomorrow, they'll play together and we'll see that and how it works, who knows. But then, you know, the flip side is like, who do you sit then? Like, is Aleem Ford going to not play as much coming off one of his better games this season? They still have to worry about guarding Joe Wieskamp. We're going to get to Iowa later, but you know, that's a big, when Greg Gard makes decisions on who plays, he does it with a idea of defensively first, like, you know, so you got to figure who's going to guard Joe Wieskamp. Tyler Wall makes the most sense there. So are we going to see a lot of Potter, Reavers, Wall tomorrow? That leaves Aleem Ford out of the mix. I don't know. It's just, as much experience as this team has, there still are lineup issues that it's not the roster from how it's constructed. It's not a perfect setup. And I think Greg Gard's been struggling with that all season.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought up Reavers and Potter just because kind of transitions what we want to talk about here. One of the biggest issues down the stretch against Michigan, and I thought you wrote really well about it in your game story and following up on it, the offensive rebounds that they let up that led to baskets that not only put Michigan in the lead, but basically put the game away for them. It's been well publicized since Sunday. Potter and Reavers combined for, 40 minutes and didn't have a single rebound, which for your two 6'11", 7-foot guys is unfathomable, really. Like, you see that and you're just like, how is that, like, possible? Now, granted, there's reasons. Like, Reavers doesn't always play next to the basket. Sometimes he's out. There is something Potter on offense, you know, he's spotting up sometimes. So he's not always next to the basket. But it just doesn't even make sense for two big men to play that long and not catch a rebound. And it kind of leads into a question that I know you mentioned your Twitter replies. A lot of people were saying in there and have been saying throughout this week that this team's soft, that the Badgers are soft. What is your assessment of that, being somebody that's seen every minute of this team?
Before I address that, I want to, one more okay. thing with the rebounds. And this is not a defense of Potter and Reavers at all, because they, you know, you have to, I don't know what the number they should have had, but certainly
you have zero's to not it.
Right. But I will say this, their main responsibility, no matter who was in the game, was keeping Dickinson off the boards. And for 34 minutes, I thought they did an okay job. He only had one offensive rebound in the first 34 minutes. Mm-hmm. So if Potter and Reavers are doing their job, keeping him away from the glass, then it's other people's job to come in and you know, gobble up those rebounds, which was happening. For the most part, that was happening. Davison, I think, had six. Wall had six. So the process was working for 34 minutes. What happened is it didn't work down the stretch. And not only that, but Dickinson made him pay. He got the offensive rebounds and turned it into points. And
yeah, that's fair.
That was the killer. Are they soft? Here's the thing that I've really been struggling with is this is largely the same roster that won the Big Ten championship last year that overcame, you know, it's been well documented, incredible amount of adversity to do so. I mean, Howard Moore's accident, the Kobe King leaving. I thought down the stretch last year, it was a really gritty team. It wasn't the most talented team, but it earned a share of the Big Ten title in part because of its grittiness. And I thought toughness. Now, maybe not always physical toughness, but I thought mentally that team was tough down the stretch. So it's hard for me to say a year later that those guys are soft. Like, how are you mentally tough one year and physically / mentally soft the next? It just, that's been the baffling thing to me. I don't know. Is this team a little bit mentally fragile at times? Yes, I totally think so. They have not shown the ability to overcome poor shooting in games, where this has always been a strength of this program, has been, all right, shots not going in, who cares? Go down and get things on the other end of the court. Win games 57-53 if you have to, you know, grind it out. And this team hasn't done that. So the finding the why of why this is all happening this year has been a struggle, but it's been really hard for me to say, you know, they're soft. I don't think they're as talented. Like I'll go back to what I said previously. The league has gotten better around them and they haven't gotten better, especially athletically. They can't match some of these teams. Michigan's way better. Illinois' best players have gotten better. Ohio State, you said that in the pre-run of the show, they've gotten better. A lot of teams around them have gotten better. Wisconsin hasn't, and that's why they are where they are with, you know, six losses already in Big Ten play. Which, by the way, and we're going to talk about this later, 9-6 isn't awful. It's only awful because this team was ranked 7th in the preseason, right? And possibly expected to win the Big Ten again.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And it's one of those things in sports where I feel like calling somebody soft, either mentally or physically, is one of like the bigger insults that you can do. That's not like cussing at them or something. You know, I feel like calling somebody soft in sports is a pretty high insult. So you don't want to just kind of throw that around. But it is one of those things where it's just like, I think you said it well, mentally, this team doesn't seem to be able to pull themselves out of tough stretches. Not either when it's shooting or when the defense isn't there. It seems like when something starts happening in a game for them, it snowballs and it's over. They don't seem to have that stopping mentality of finding different ways, or it's just, it's weird. And I think you made a really good point about the rebounds as a whole. Like when you've got a freak like Dickinson out there for Michigan, keeping him away from the basket's more important than you yourself grabbing the rebound. You got, and like you said, you got to rely on other people. So I think that explains a little bit of it, but it is tough when you see in those key moments, two guys that you think are supposed to be your more physical, your big post guys, just not getting it done. And I think that's where people's frustration are coming from. It's like, well, why aren't you being able to do what he's doing? You know?
Right. Absolutely. And you know, I've watched the second half twice now since, you know, after watching it live. They got body on Dickinson every time, but his reach was better. They didn't finish. Mm-hmm. And Michael Potter said that yesterday. I think that's the most important part. Boxing out is important, but you got to finish. You got to read the ball where it's coming. You have to go for the ball. I thought a couple of times, whether it was Potter or Reavers, had they just gone for the rebound, like jumped for it or reached for it, maybe that's an over-the-back call on Dickinson.
Yeah, maybe it's a foul.
Or, reaches, yeah. So it just kind of took themselves out of it. And here's this answers the soft or not soft question. Other teams are tougher. So is it that Wisconsin's soft? You know, I don't think soft is the word I'd use, but other teams are showing that they're tougher. And that's the disappointing part for Wisconsin, is that they've almost always over the last 20 years, when they're good teams, been tougher. They haven't always been talented, but they've been tougher. And you just can't say that about this team. There's no evidence to support that they're tougher than these teams. Last year, I think you could say that down the stretch. And again, I don't know. I don't know why it happened then and why it's not happening now. I, not to go off track here, but I tried probing around with Greg Gard yesterday, just about, I had heard Bill Self from Kansas be interviewed this week. And he said, he's finding himself talking, worried more about his players' mental health and stuff because of the pandemic. And,
oh, yeah.
And winning and losing isn't as important to him because he's more concerned about that. And I wanted to ask Greg Gard about that. It's a tough question to answer because winning is still very important to.
Yeah. And that's a very convenient thing for Bill Self to say now when his team's not that good this year.
Yeah. And Greg Gard really didn't, you know, I don't know that he gave me a great answer. And I think part of it was, you know, he didn't want to give excuses because everybody's going through the same thing. Every team's like, Wisconsin's no worse off by the pandemic than any other team. And other teams are able to overcome it. But I asked him, are his seniors distracted? You know, that's the thing. Like everybody's like, oh, it's great to have a senior laden team. I'm not so sure it always is, because are those guys thinking of their future? You know, is the pressure on them to perform down the stretch because it helps them in the future in terms of where they play basketball next? And, you know, he didn't really go down that road either. It just, it looks like a distracted team, right? I mean, that's fair to say.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And just not completely focused like it was last year. And so I don't know, like, I feel like I'm just trying to find, searching for answers on why this is happening. And again, like if Blaster didn't end the way it did, this wouldn't be all that surprising, right?
Right. Yeah. Because you know? It's the same team, and yeah, they were average last year and then they'd be average this year. That's in line.
They might've started the season ranked somewhere between 20 and 25. And then you look at this right now, they're 21 and it's about right. But it's just that the expectations were enormous, and I'm not blaming it. I picked this team to win the Big Ten because I thought in a pandemic, a team that had so much continuity from the previous year would be at an advantage. And it hasn't been that way with this team.
Yeah, it's.
I think the thing that's showing this year is that talent wins out, right?
In a sport like I feel like in basketball where the variables are, I think, just lessened because there are only five guys, right? Like, yeah, talent is eventually going to win out, especially when you get to this point of the year. I think once you've found the routine of how to manage the pandemic and how you practice and do all this travel and everything else, like, yeah, then eventually it's just going to come back down to who's got the better team on the floor. And I think football and some of the other sports we're seeing at the college level, the continuity and the experience teams had together made a lot more difference than it's making right now in college basketball. Because, I mean, you look at Gonzaga and Baylor, like, far and away, like, the top two teams, like, it's them and, you know, Michigan, now Ohio State kind of in that top-tier mix. I mean, Gonzaga's best player is a freshman that didn't get to practice with them until a week before the season started, basically. So, I mean, it's really coming down to talent right now. So let's jump ahead to this Iowa game, Jim, because it's not to say that the entire season swings on it, because I think the season, even with a win, the season's going to still be looked at as a little bit of a disappointment. But you look at their wins, the 15 wins they have right now, what's their best win? What's their signature win that's on the resume at the moment? I mean, weirdly enough, it might be Loyola in the non-conference because of where they were in the net rankings then, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, which seems crazy. I mean, Louisville on paper is a good win, but I think we all know that Louisville was coming off a pause because of a COVID-19 positive test and didn't have its best player that game.
Mm-hmm.
So again, the computers love that win, but how impressive was it really? Probably at Rutgers to me is one of the best wins. Although Rutgers wasn't playing great at the time, Rutgers started playing a lot better after that game. So much of it too is when you get a team, and that's, you know, that's why I thought Michigan was a chance. You know, you had a chance to get a really impressive signature win on Sunday because you had a Michigan team that hadn't played in 23 days or whatever, and was going to be a little bit rusty and was rusty, and you took advantage of it for 20 minutes. But I think, you know, there's no doubt that Michigan's the better team and showed in the second half.
Right. So going into this, I kind of fallen into that. There's no real blue chip win for Wisconsin this year, and Iowa come into the Kohl Center as a chance to get one. And you've got it in our notes here, Jim, that Wisconsin hasn't lost two games in a row this season. So that kind of bodes well for them. And, but at the same time, Iowa is a very, very difficult team to stop defensively. And then when you struggle to score like Wisconsin has offensively, there's not an easy blueprint for how Wisconsin's able to win this game on Thursday.
No, I mean, you know, and that's the thing. Like, I looked at this matchup before the season began. I'm like, well, Wisconsin can split these games in part because of what you just said. Iowa's defense is so bad and really has been. I mean, they're still like 107 nationally in adjusted defensive efficiency, which is terrible. Although they have been a little bit better on that end of the court lately. But it's just, I don't trust this Wisconsin offense to take advantage of that. You know, Iowa still has length. They still are going to throw that zone at you and you're going to have to make some shots. And who trusts this Wisconsin team to make shots right now? Right. So that's kind of the daunting thing going into this game. Like I agree. Like I hate throwing around the word must win, but it kind of feels a little bit like that to me. Like of all the games they have left, where you can get a quality win, this feels like the best chance. And if you lose this one, there's no gimmies on the schedule the rest of the way. Even Northwestern is due at some point. it's just it feels like they really need this one tomorrow.
Yeah, and again, and it would continue the Northwestern trend of beating UW when they shouldn't.
Right, right. I mean, because they're going to make that game ugly on Sunday. I just think, like, you're right. Nothing that happens down the stretch here is going to make people look at this regular season in a positive light. But I just think this team needs some sort of confidence. I don't think they believe in themselves, right? Which is understandable based on results against really good teams this year. I just think this team needs something positive to build on. And, you know, beating Iowa would be that.
Right. And the thing that makes Iowa so tough, and you mentioned him earlier, you got Wieskamp, who's, you know, more than likely going to, it's tough to say who's going to make all conference teams and which one, because there's just so many good players in the league this year, but he's going to be on all Big Ten team, Wieskamp. And then it's not just him. Obviously you've got Garza, defending player of the year last season. And I think this is a chance for Potter and Reavers. You know, they've been getting beat up since Sunday afternoon. There's just no question about that. And how much they let that in, how much they hear it, who knows? But they know that they didn't play well enough down the stretch, and they're getting called soft, like we just talked about a few minutes ago. I mean, if you want to prove you're not soft, play well against Lou Garza.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, they go from Hunter Dickinson, who was really, really good, to a guy who's not as big in Garza, but works harder than anybody in the league. He's the most relentless. He's tough. He doesn't put up the numbers he does because he's soft. You know, he's one of the hardest workers, and he's just going to keep pounding on them, and they're going to have to fight back. I mean, they're going to have to. What I'd like to see is them go at him defensively, try to get him in foul trouble, because he's not a good defender. You know, you can go at him, you can score off him. So you don't want to trade buckets with this team, but that's one way you can score, is to go right at him and attack. So I'd hope to see good performances from both of them. I mean, both of them were on the call yesterday and, you know, sounded positive enough, but you'd like to see it in a game. You'd like to see them, you know, perform the way that we know they're capable of. And again, like, the thing that I didn't want to come out of Sunday was that it was just those two, because it wasn't.
No.
I mean, you can go down the list of players that were responsible for that loss. Brad Davison was partly responsible for that loss. Trice didn't play the greatest. You know, it's a lot of things going wrong. It's never just one or two guys, but certainly the offensive rebounding was the stat that stood out down the stretch.
For sure. And I think one of the things that you mentioned right there that's really important, and I don't watch a ton of Iowa games, not going to claim like I do, but the times I have, when Garza has a foul in the first half, he becomes a turnstile. And which I don't blame him. He knows how important he is to the team on offense and what he can do rebounding and everything like that. But when you get a foul on him early, he just lets you score. And that's something that you've got to take advantage of if you're Wisconsin, and you can get a foul on him. And you try to do it again in the second half, get him up to three, and then make him, you know, play less aggressive. Because I think this game's going to have to be won by – if Wisconsin wins this game, they've got to shoot 20, 25 free throws. I don't see a pathway – with how they're shooting the ball from three, and not like you can trade threes with this Iowa team. But to me, if you're going to beat Iowa right now, the way Wisconsin's playing, you've got to get to the line and use the fact that you were one of the better free throw shooting teams in the country to your advantage.
Yeah. When's the last time that happened? I'm trying to think of a game where I really thought they were aggressive enough to build.
Yeah. That's the problem too.
That just hasn't happened. And, but you're right. I mean, you got to go at this defense. You got to make Jordan Bohannon work on defense. You know, he's not a good defender either. They've got enough guys on this team that aren't good defenders and you can take advantage of, but you got to do it. You got to make shots, and we'll see if they're capable of doing that. They haven't shot 20 free throws in a game since Indiana on January 7th. And that was a double overtime game.
So it took 10 extra minutes.
They shot 30 at Michigan State in the second Big Ten game of the year.
Michigan State's falling off a cliff here, but that looked like it was going to be their best Big Ten win, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's, I left that place thinking, okay, this team could be pretty good, but then Michigan State just isn't who I thought it was either.
Yeah. You mentioned Bohannon. Did you see his comments on Tuesday?
Yeah. Did you see them all though?
No, I just saw the $20,000 in the McDonald's bag one.
So. Yeah. Right. I mean, I don't want to call out anybody, but there was a lot of clickbaiting going on yesterday.
Okay.
I watched the video. He made that comment as a joke, And then he went on to praise Bo Ryan and Gary Close and Greg Gard for how much he respected them. I think it was a joke. The flip side of this too is Wisconsin didn't offer him. They evaluated him and didn't offer him. They had other point guards that year that they were way more interested in. And then by the time they got down to plan C and D, Bohannon was long committed to Iowa, and then Wisconsin ended up getting Demetri Trice in the spring. But they went after Peyton Pritchard from Oregon that year. They went after Xavier Simpson from Michigan. Ja'Cory McLaughlin, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. They went after him. They evaluated Bohannon, and from what I had heard, they just didn't think he could play well enough on the defensive end to cut it at Wisconsin. And they weren't wrong.
There's no evidence that they were wrong in that valuation.
Right. Would you like to have his three-point shooting? Yes. He's been a really solid player for now his fifth season at Iowa, but let's not pretend he's all world. He made third team all Big Ten his sophomore year. That program hasn't finished higher than third place since he's been there. So let's, you know, cut Wisconsin some slack a little bit for not recruiting him, because I think Trice ended up being just as good, if not better, performer over 5 years than he has.
Yeah,
but again, I don't want to rip Bohannon because
it was a joke and talking about Tennessee, whoever it was that was giving out McDonald's bags full of money.
Right, and then it gets put in a headline, and that's the only part of his quote that got featured in the headline and the story. And it's like I said, it's clickbaity. It's not, you know, you need context when you see quotes like that. You absolutely need context. And there was certainly more context to what he said.
Sure. That was impressive. Recruit recall from 5 years ago. Nice work.
Yeah. I'm a little anxious when I do that, 'cause I feel like I could be getting an entire recruiting cycle wrong, but I have written about that. I felt like, if I didn't do the Bohannon Trice story at one point in my career, I thought about doing it and did the research, and yeah.
Gotcha. All right. Let's, as we wrap up basketball here, let's talk about NCAA seeding. You can go on Madison.com and check out, I collected all like the top bracketologists' opinions for this week for the Badgers. Obviously it can change with a win on Thursday night against Iowa, but right now, the Badgers sit at either the last five seed or a middle six seed in all the major bracketology projections. This stretch down last five games here, where you've got Iowa twice, Illinois, Purdue, lots of chances to possibly up that for the Badgers. But just what's kind of your take on where, I guess, it's tough to say where they sit right now is not going to be where they sit unless, you know, they go 5-0. Yeah, they're going to shoot right up, but that's very unlikely. They go 0-5, they're going to crater, which right now seems a little bit more likely than the other option.
Yeah, and I was trying to think, like, what's the bottom? How low could they fall in terms of seeding?
Yeah, I mean, if they were to go 0-5, that would put them at, like, what, 15-12 going to the Big Ten tournament? So, I mean, I don't know.
What if you lose one there?
I would say 11 or 12 seed. If they really were to go 0-5, 0-6 on the stretch here.
You're going to be an interesting case study if they do only win one or two or go completely winless, because, again, the computer rankings not going to follow that much, because all these losses would be, with exception Northwestern, would be quality, quote-unquote quality losses, I guess you call them. The computers still love them. I mean, they've got enough quality victories. And like, here's my rant. I got a lot of people are complaining that they're still ranked in the top 25 in the AP poll, which means nothing, first of all, right? The AP poll means absolutely zero. But people,
that's why Jim's not a voter anymore.
Well, that's not it. I mean, I think it's got value, right? I think it's got value. I think it's something. It just means nothing in terms of NCAA seeding. And what people completely don't understand, because they only watch one team, I think, is that everybody behind them is losing too. Like, there are no consistent teams beyond 3, 4, or 5, right? Iowa has 6 losses this year and is number 11. Number 11. That's one fewer loss than Wisconsin has, and they're 10 spots higher, right? Wisconsin keeps going 1-1 every week, but every team behind them is either doing the same or losing more games. And nobody in that group of 30 to 35 is doing anything better to jump them. It's just that there's a lot of parity once you get beyond top 8 or 9 or whatever. Mm-hmm. So do I think Wisconsin deserves to be ranked 21? I'm fine with it. Like, if you don't have Wisconsin, if you're a ranker, if you're a pollster and you don't have them in the top 25, that's fine. I don't care. Like, either way, that's fine. I'm not going to like criticize you, but there's probably a team at 20 or 21 in your poll that doesn't belong there. Right. Like what do you do with Loyola, which has lost to Wisconsin by 14 points. And with the exception of Drake, doesn't really play anybody during the Missouri Valley Conference. There's a lot of teams with pretty records that just don't play anybody. You can't punish a team like Wisconsin that plays in the Big Ten, where every game is a top 50 KenPom or top 50 net game. You know, it's just
right.
All right. So I don't know. That's my long-winded rant on people getting mad about the AP poll and saying that this team, like, one guy's like, you keep telling people that Wisconsin is good. I don't at all. That's not what I'm saying.
Listen to this podcast. I don't think that's right, what he's saying.
I'm just telling you that they're ranked and I think they should be ranked, or I have no problem with them being ranked because I think they've got one of the top 25 resumes in the nation right now. And that says more about college basketball than it does about Wisconsin.
Yeah. I saw a thing this week that this year's Big Ten was chasing, I think it was 04 or 05 ACC for like the greatest KenPom conference in the history of KenPom, which is what, 35 years-ish?
No, it's like 2001, so 21 years.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So it goes, still, I mean.
And it jumped like the Big 12 from, I don't remember what year, into the second best one. Yeah. So, I mean, that, again, that says something. Like, you play 20 games, a 20-game schedule against that type of competition, and your computer ranking's not going to fall. And voters are, I think they're the astute voters are look at that and say, well, we're not going to punish a Wisconsin team that just lost the number three team in the nation.
Mm-hmm. And was up 14 on them.
Yeah, it's up 14. Right. And lost by 8. You know, it's just, I understand why people still have, I mean, some people have, there's one guy that has them number 11 in his poll, which I can't agree with that, but that's part of the reason why, you know, it's an interesting mix. There's one guy, I think it was an 11, a 14, a 15, and there's like probably 10 voters that have them outside the top 25, which again, like anywhere from 20 to 30 is fine with me. Like I get it. I can see anything. But back to our original point, you got to win some games down the stretch. You can't go into the NCAA tournament with a 2-8 stretch and expect to be.
All right, let's jump into some football here, Jim. Make sure you're going on Madison.com, following all of Jim's basketball stuff. He mentioned he's got some, Reavers Potter discussion heading into this Iowa game, going to be on Madison.com for you guys to read going into the game. But jumping into the football here, as I mentioned off the top of the show, Paul Chryst said last week he's going to call plays again. He's going to coach quarterbacks again. I got to talk to him for about half an hour last Friday. Really good stuff just about the reasons behind kind of taking this back over and readjusting this coaching staff. Because it is weird because, I mean, it's kind of been spread out over the last 8 weeks, but there's been a significant overhaul on this coaching staff, not only in its construction, but the people. I know they promoted Kalaji from strength coach, or I shouldn't say promoted, moved Kalaji from strength coach to D-line coach, and then brought in Hank Poteet as the cornerbacks coach. But I think what this shows is that Paul Chryst not only trusts Jim Leonard pretty much entirely with this defense, but it also knows that asking Joe Rudolph to be a play caller and coach offensive line, which not only the lifeblood of the program, but it's the second biggest group on this team. But like when you're talking about raw number of players that you're in charge of, it just wasn't going to work long-term. And I think this is the right move, not only for Chris because of his, you know, knowledge and ability as a play caller, but just for the team as a whole, to let Joe Rudolph be the offensive line coach, you know where he is, help you with game planning, and then you call the plays as a head coach. I think this is the right mix for this team right now.
I do too. And a lot of people are going to look at it like just based on last season alone. I just don't think it was reactionary to last season. I've said this before. Last season was hard to, it's hard to gauge what happened in those games for a lot of reasons. The stop and go with the virus, the injuries. I don't think you can judge this offense based on those 7 games or 8 games or whatever, but right. I do like the overall point that the offensive line is the one position that you do not want to slip. And I thought did slip a little bit last year. Now, is that because Joe Rudolph had too much on his plate? Maybe. But Paul Chryst has been he's been a proven play caller for a long time. And I think the one thing I always was a little bit concerned about is this too much on his plate, you know? But I think that's only if you can find someone. I think he looked for a quarterback's coach who could have helped with the play calling. And had he found someone, I think the staff makeup could have been completely different. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's definitely possible.
But I don't think he found anybody. And I don't know if it's a backup plan or another plan is, hey, I can just do this myself and, you know, be in charge of the quarterbacks still. And it'll work. I don't know. I don't see this as a big problem. And I certainly don't see it as a reaction to 2020 season.
Yeah. You make two good points there. And I want to hit both of them. So going back to the 2020 season, I think Paul Chryst did a very clear job of explaining that had it been a normal off season and not the pandemic, not a canceled season, then brought it back, all that stuff, he would have been calling plays last year. Like that, him giving up play calling, I think, was reactionary to the situation as opposed to taking it back being reactionary to how it went. I think it's the opposite. I think he just said, I'm only letting up play calling because of the situation we're in and how much stuff I have to do outside of getting ready for games. So I think that's the biggest part there. But to the point of not letting the offensive line slip and this construction, he said that he's always thought about having a dedicated cornerbacks coach because corners and safeties, what you do in individual drills and some of the things you have to do preparation wise are so different, especially for how Jim Leonard and this defense has been under Paul Chryst, that he said, you know, it's kind of tough where you're splitting up the group, but then having just Jim Leonard coaching that whole defensive back group. So splitting up the group allows a lot more attention, I think, to this corner position, which has been underwhelming. I mean, we talked all about last year how much experience the corner group had. I don't think they played great. I mean, especially down the stretch, like they had that. I think Indiana was their overall best game as a group, especially considering the fact that that was the week that Wild Goose left. But outside of that, it wasn't pretty, especially when teams went deep. I mean, Iowa torched them deep, but Wake Forest was torching them until the safeties and linebackers started getting interceptions. So I think this cornerback group needed a shakeup and needed kind of some different attention in that way. And I think, too, you got to consider the fact that Paul Chryst gets to keep Jim Leonard. Not that he was – and I asked him specifically about this, the Packer offer for Jim Leonard and this decision to kind of take something off his plate a little bit. Were those together or was that just kind of weird timing? He said, yeah, it was just timing. We were already in the process of hiring Hank Poteet before the Packers stuff with Jim Leonard came up. So I wanted to put that out there and kind of put that in the story. But I think splitting those things up, letting Jim Leonard focus on just the safety position, which you know he knows inside and out, and then the defense as a whole, keeping them at that level. And then if you're Paul Chryst, you've got to look at this as we have a 2-year window here with Graham Mertz, who, you know, obviously struggled last season, with COVID and all this other stuff, didn't play well, but give him a real off season where he knows he's the number one guy working with this group of receivers, which has to stay on the field. I mean, if you go into another year where you're on the third and fourth receiver from game 3 on, it's not going to be pretty again. But I think he sees we have a chance here with what we have, this quarterback and an offensive line that we think is going to be pretty good. Jalen Berger in the backfield. The fact that Ohio State's rebuilding, as rebuilding as Ohio State gets, they're not going to have a quarterback. Yeah. I mean, they don't have a proven quarterback next season, and they lost a ton on defense for the second year in a row. Eventually, it's got to catch up with them a little bit. Penn State's still coming up. You look at, especially in the West, I mean, Minnesota didn't have a great year. Nebraska's not there yet, obviously. Iowa just beat you, but, you know, I don't see a ton there, especially with the defense, the losses they have on defense. I think Chryst sees this as we have a 2-year window for a Big Ten championship opportunity with a quarterback that we think could be one of the best in the league. Let me put as much emphasis and effort and attention I can into that offense, into this quarterback, and try to elevate this offense as high as it can go with my involvement. Because, I mean, as we talked about before, this offense is Paul Chris. This is who he is. This is who he's always has been as an offensive coordinator, and this program is him. So I think this is him kind of putting all his chips on the table, trying to set everything else up around him so he can really focus in on this offense and this quarterback.
Which you can do if you trust the guy running the defense, right? And you give him full – and like you said, like getting a little bit off Jim Leonard's plate helps in that regard, just to – that he's not focused on – not having to be focused on corners, safeties, and running the defense as a whole. He just has one less item on his plate. So, yeah, I think all that makes sense.
Yeah, and it was funny. I just counted through the guys that you listed as corners or safeties. There's 21 of them. There's 20 offensive linemen. But then last season you had both of the guys who coached those positions entirely also calling plays for the respective side of the ball. So I think he saw that as not long-term viable. And it was funny because Chris was talking about how when he came back, who was it? Dave Aranda is still here. And he actually talked to Aranda about having a corners coach so he didn't have to coach linebackers and they could kind of switch some things up. And Aranda said that he preferred coaching linebackers because he was relaying calls into them. All that made sense. Then Wilcox comes in, same type of deal. They talked about having a corners coach and they just accepted it. And then at that point, obviously Leonard comes in 2017 and then it kind of become established. This is the way that the coaching staff set up. Leonard becomes DC. All right, you're also still the D-backs coach because we're not going to have wholesale changes on the staff. And then that's just how it's been. So I think the idea of shaking it up has always been on Chris's mind to open some things up for the defensive coordinator. And then now it's finally come to fruition in that he's got the guy that he wants and Hank Poteet, the guy he has experience with from Pittsburgh and likes a lot, and then has Jim Leonard on staff who he fully trusts with his defense.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting makeup of the staff now. I mean, it's not often that you have to make multiple changes in the offseason, but they did that and got a guy that he knew. Like I said, I think we knew that he wasn't going to go too far outside the family when he made these changes, right? Or when he had to fill these positions, and he didn't. He got a guy he knew from Pittsburgh and moved Ross Kalaji into a strength and condition, or from the strength and conditioning position to the defensive line. So largely remains from a continuity standpoint, which I know has always been important to him, that remains intact.
Yeah. And to me, that's the advantage that they have right now over a lot of teams in the conference is that, yeah, they had some changes, but it's still a lot of the guys that you were already talking to anyway. Like I thought it was interesting when we talked to Kalaji about moving over is that, you know, a big part of every recruiting trip or, you know, all these Zooms and stuff is talking to the strength coach. Now it just changes up a little bit with the D line. So I'm a little bit trying to think of the word. I've seen people being like, kind of trying to trash Joe Rudolph or, you know, being like, oh, we finally figured it out that Paul Chris should be running things. It's like, Paul Chris knows that that's the thing that he can add the most to as a head coach is the offensive side and the play calling. And it's definitely not a reflection of what happened last year, I don't think. And I think that's important for people to understand.
Yeah, I just keep going back to, I don't know how I would evaluate last season just because of the weirdness to it. You know, I'm curious, like when Paul Chris kind of looked it over, like how, you know, he's obviously not going to talk about that, but like what, how does he like look at last season and what all went wrong? I mean, it's just, it's one of those, you can't compare it to anything. That last season was unlike any other. And it's, you know, some seasons look alike and you can kind of compare them. That one didn't. And it's just, it was bizarre from the second game on.
Yeah. And we actually did talk a little bit about that because I asked him, like, as you get further away from it, how do you kind of reflect on that season? And part of what he said was, you know, there were a lot of issues that we had that were COVID and they're well documented, but we had issues that weren't like, yeah, injuries, everything like that, but we didn't play well enough at times. I'm trying to pull up this one quote. What he said was, you know, there's things we can learn from it, grow from it. COVID shed a light on some things maybe that we weren't doing well enough, but you can't blame it on COVID. And there are areas where we can get better and make improvement. A lot of people would just say, oh, that was COVID. It was this season. If we're really honest, we can be better at doing this, this, and that. So what wasn't COVID with what happened, everything, we have to get better at. So I think a decent balance of understanding that some things were out of your control with COVID, but other things just didn't work well enough last season. And that's why you got the results you did.
Yeah, interesting. Not using it as a crutch. It's good to hear.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So we'll wrap it up there. Jim, what do you got coming up for this weekend? We'll see what happens with the game tonight.
Yeah, kind of going to, it's been tough to write about this team lately, because you could literally write every game about how their offense is struggling. So I'm hopefully, you know, I'm going to write for the Iowa game just about kind of Potter and Reavers needing to bounce back, and especially with Garza, that massive challenge, and then see where it goes from there. You know, this is an important week. We say this every week probably, but this is really an important week, because I want to see how they respond. You keep wanting them to show some fight, and you know, if you win a couple that, you know, we use the stat about they haven't lost two in a row. That's true. They also haven't won more than two in a row in Big Ten. You know, they can't get on a roll, and that's, you'd like to see that in some form or fashion down the stretch here, just to provide some sort of hope leading into the postseason.
For sure. Might be a slow weekend with football stuff, but we'll see if anything comes up there. But make sure you're following.
Every time you say that, I feel like something will happen. So
that's fair. And right after we post this, something's going to break, right? So that's just keeping tradition.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. All right. Make sure you're following Jim on Twitter for pre, post game, and during game stuff. Jim Polzine, WSJ. Follow me as well, CBart WSJ. Anything else coming up this weekend? But for Jim Polzine, I'm Colton Bartholomew. Thank you guys so much for listening.